Yesterday, Queen Elizabeth II died. In the UK and across the world, flowers were placed on memorials. Flags were lowered to half-mast. There were gun salutes around the Commonwealth. And thousands gathered outside royal palaces to pay their respects.
The Queen has done so much for us for the past 70 years.
She was an iconic woman and a role model.
While I was in Bangladesh, I saw her through the TV. I really do feel emotional.
She meant a lot to me.
I always looked up to her from when I was just a baby.
She was like the nation's grandmother.
I absolutely loved her. I think she was an incredible woman.
At 96, Queen Elizabeth reigned longer than any other British monarch. She led her family and the institution into the 21st century, weathering change and huge scandals along the way.
People really embraced her, regardless of what they thought of monarchy, actually.
That's our colleague Max Colchester.
Even if they were anti-monarchy, they thought she was a good thing because she was a symbol of devotion and self-sacrifice, and she gave herself fully to that job in a way that, regardless of what you think of being a king or a queen, was remarkable.
Now her son Charles is king and will lead what in many ways is one of the world's strangest family businesses. But can it survive in its current form without Queen Elizabeth? Welcome to The Journal, our show about money, business, and power. I'm Ryan Knudsen. It's Friday, September 9th. Coming up on the show, what the death of the Queen means for the future of the royal family.
This episode is brought to you by GlobalX ETFs. Looking to invest? Start your journey by exploring exchange-traded funds with GlobalX ETFs. Exchange-traded funds, or ETFs for short, create baskets of stocks, bonds, and other assets that you can buy in a single trade. GlobalX specializes in ETFs that track emerging trends, like the rise of artificial intelligence, as well as strategies aimed to generate income potential. Visit GlobalXETFs.com to discover how you can get started.
So people have often referred to the royal family as the firm, as if the royal family in some ways is a company. And if that's the case, does that mean that the Queen has been its CEO effectively for the last 70 years?
Yes. I mean, she's been the sort of the chairwoman, CEO, not the founder. We can't say that. But she's got 1,000 years before her stretching out. But that's quite a good way to look at it, is that she, you know, at a time when the firm was struggling with its identity, scrabbling for a place in itself in the world, she kind of re-overhauled the image and, you know, fixed the roof, basically.
Elizabeth became queen in 1952, when she was only 25. Millions watched her coronation, the first one ever televised. She gave a speech that same day.
The ceremonies you have seen today are ancient, and some of their origins are veiled in the mists of the past. But their spirit and their meaning shine through the ages, never perhaps more brightly than now. I have in sincerity pledged myself to your service, as so many of you are pledged to mine. Throughout all my life and with all my heart, I shall strive to be worthy of your trust.
She was seen as an extremely fresh face. She was a young, attractive woman, and she was seen as someone who could take the monarchy on into a sort of more modern age.
When she took over, it was a different era. The tabloids didn't report on the private lives of princes and princesses in the same way they do now. The monarchy was seen as disconnected from the people in their daily lives.
And in many ways, it was a monarchy that basically was used to their subjects serving them as opposed to serving their subjects. And I think that's the great transformation that she oversaw, is that the monarchy in the end under her became something that existed to give back to the people of Britain and the members of the Commonwealth.
Queen Elizabeth tried to change the perception of the royal family and make it more visible. She worked with nonprofits and attended hundreds of public events a year.
And I think, you know, she was once said to have said, the monarchy is something that needs to be seen to be believed. And I think she very much worked to do that. And that meant being out amongst her people. And that made her a presence in people's lives in many ways.
Over the years, the Queen became one of the most recognizable people in the world. She was known for her fancy hats, her corgi dogs, and her love of horse racing. But Max said that one of her defining characteristics is what she chose not to share.
She was known for being neutral. You know, she managed to stay above the fray. She wasn't polemical. She was someone who represented a certain way of doing things without actually expressing an opinion. And that was actually very cherished by many people in the end. And they wanted someone who just sort of embodied things as opposed to constantly spouted opinions about them.
Like, people always wanted to know what she thought about Brexit, but she never let on, did she?
No, she never let on. And she made very few political interventions. I mean, I remember there was one time during the Scottish independence referendum about a decade ago here, and obviously the Queen is the monarch of Great Britain as a whole, Scotland included, and she came out and made a sort of vague remark that they should think very carefully, which was obviously taken as a warning that they shouldn't do it. But just even that sort of vague statement was seen as a sort of huge intervention in the independence debate and a rare sort of foray by her into politics.
The Queen and her husband, Prince Philip, had four children, Charles, Anne, Andrew, and Edward. And each one has had to take on the duties that come with being part of the family business. What is the business model for the royal family? Does it bring in money?
Well, that's debated. I mean, they say the monarchy itself says it is a very important part of Britain's social fabric. It also projects soft power abroad. And it brings a lot of tourism as well into the UK. And those things you can't really put a price on.
The royal family makes money from real estate and other investments, but most of their costs are covered by UK taxpayers. Last year, the bill came to over £86 million.
It has been getting increasingly expensive of late. And at a time when people are about to plunge into recession here, there are those who question whether it is worth continuing to spend vast sums to sort of subsidize this monarchy.
But the business of the royal family extends beyond the UK. And during her reign, this aspect of the business has shifted. When the Queen took power, she became head of the Commonwealth, which is made up of former colonies of the British Empire, like Australia, Canada, Nigeria. In total, the Commonwealth has encompassed dozens of countries. But some of those countries have left, many no longer wanting to have their former colonizer as their head of state.
So a lot of countries that were ruled by Britain became independent during Queen Elizabeth's lifetime, which fundamentally altered her role, and Britain invented the Commonwealth as a sort of substitute to that, a sort of club of nations which Britain used to rule, so that Britain could continue to sort of, in many ways, pretend to have some say or have some sort of soft power via those nations.
Over the decades, the Queen also presided over changes within her own family, including a number of scandals that damaged their image. Max says that a key test for the royal brand came after Charles married Diana in 1981. Diana was incredibly popular and was known as the people's princess. But both she and Charles had affairs. And then, at the Queen's request, they got a divorce. In 1997, she died in a car crash in Paris.
Diana caused a reputation crisis for the monarchy. The Queen's popularity and the monarchy's popularity dropped very severely in reaction to the death of Diana and the way that the monarchy handled that death. And it failed initially, at least, to connect with the British people or understand that the British people were very upset by Diana's death and also the way that the palace had ostensibly treated her. And that was a real shock for the monarchy. And I think it forced a real fundamental rethink of how the monarchy operated here.
After her death, the public's focus shifted to Diana's young sons, William and Harry. And in 2011, thousands gathered.
Lots of shouts from the crowd here.
To watch William marry Kate Middleton. The two famously kissed on the Buckingham Palace balcony.
And that's the reward. The first public kiss as husband and wife.
But in recent years, the Queen faced new challenges. In 2018, her grandson Harry married the American actress Meghan Markle. At first, it was seen as another modernizing moment for the royal family. Markle took on royal duties. But soon after, she and Harry withdrew from the firm and moved to the U.S. In a 2-hour interview with Oprah after their move, Markle revealed the inner workings of the firm and even said that she and Harry experienced racism from a member of the family, an accusation they denied.
There are several conversations.
There's a conversation with you?
With Harry.
About how dark your baby is going to be?
Potentially, and what that would mean or look like.
And so by effectively sort of pushing people's attention in that direction, that caused a huge problem. And I think it was a very, very, very difficult thing for the monarchy to digest. I mean, the interesting thing is in the UK, most people came out on the side of the monarch. And they felt that Meghan Markle had overstepped the mark and was making false accusations, basically.
The royal family has also had to deal with a scandal surrounding the Queen's son, Prince Andrew. He was accused of sexually abusing a 17-year-old girl. He denied the allegations. He was forced to step back from his royal duties. Earlier this year, he paid a settlement to the accuser.
There have been a sort of series of image-damaging scandals that have dripped out, but in many ways, the Queen herself has remained insulated from that. She's not been tarnished by those scandals. And that's why I think she was such a powerful member of the firm in many ways, because she could rise above those.
Why is that? Why do you think she was able to avoid the tarnish of those scandals?
I think simply by dint of her personal behavior and the fact that, as I said, she had been in power for so long and worked so hard for the nation that people were willing to not tar her with the same brush as some of the more junior members of the royal family who didn't have her track record.
Now, those junior members of the royal family are taking on the Queen's legacy, especially her son, Charles, who is now king. But is he up to the job? That's next.
This episode is brought to you by GlobalX ETFs. Buzz around artificial intelligence is seemingly everywhere. Is your portfolio keeping up? Consider the GlobalX Artificial Intelligence and Technology ETF, ticker AIQ, which invests in dozens of stocks at the leading edge of this disruption. Investing involves risk, including possible loss of principal. Technology companies can be affected by rapid product obsolescence and intense industry competition. Before investing carefully, consider the fund's objectives, risks, charges, expenses, and more in the full or summary prospectus at globalxetfs.com. Read carefully. Distributed by SEI Investments Distribution Company.
This episode is brought to you by Vonage. With Vonage Video API, your developers can easily create custom video experiences tailored to your business. Enhance every conversation with live video, whether it's delivering faster tech support, improving customer service, or enabling interactive meetings and events. Unlock the true video potential of your business. Discover how at Vonage.com.
Earlier today, the new king made a speech to the nation.
As the Queen herself did with such unswerving devotion, I too now solemnly pledge myself, throughout the remaining time God grants me, to uphold the constitutional principles at the heart of our nation. And wherever you may live in the United Kingdom, or in the realms and territories across the world, and whatever may be your background or beliefs, I shall endeavor to serve you with loyalty, respect, and love, as I have throughout my life.
So the UK now has a king, the Queen's eldest son, Charles, who's taking over the family business.
Yeah.
What do people think of him?
Charles is much less popular than the Queen. I think at the moment, Charles has an approval rating of 42%. Compared to the Queen's 75%. So you can see it's quite a steep drop. And the problem Charles has is that he has a reputation for not rising above the fray in the same way that his mother did. He has used his time awaiting power to effectively campaign on issues ranging from climate change to the way that businesses handle themselves. And much of those things, you know, have been lauded, and he's been praised for being far-sighted in many of these issues. But he is someone who has expressed a view, and in a way that punctures some of the mysticism around monarchy. And he won't be able to basically copy his mother, who rose above all this stuff by not saying very much and being completely uncontroversial. And so he'll be a very different king in that respect.
If I'm being honest, God Save the Queen has a much better ring to it than God Save the King.
Well, exactly. It's weird, isn't it? Because we're just so used to it. She's embedded in life in Britain. You have to understand she's on our banknotes. She's on our stamps. It's hard to express how much will, in a way, change now that she's gone.
Does it matter that people don't seem to like Charles as much as they liked his mother?
Yeah, it does matter. I think this is an institution that relies on the goodwill of its subjects. And I think you can see that in the way it operates. It's very, very conscious that if people turn against it, its reason for being quickly evaporates. I mean, it's not, you know, this isn't a medieval feudal society where the king is king because he has a big army and he can crush you if you rise up against him. Nowadays, the king here is king because you want him to be king. And I think they're very aware that if the tide of opinion turns against them, then it could get very difficult for them quite quickly, actually.
When Charles arrived at Buckingham Palace today in London, crowds gave him a warm welcome. And he has been preparing for this role for a long time. When the Queen became ill earlier this year, he stepped in and took on her royal duties.
Charles has gradually taken over a lot of the duties that the Queen did. So in a way, the palace has done a sort of soft launch for Prince Charles by ensuring that he has started to take on the roles of monarch before he was even monarch.
He's in his 70s now, King Charles is, which seems quite late in life to be taking on such a big job, I suppose, unless you're president of the United States, in which case you can be even older. But how do you think that'll affect the reign that he will have?
King Charles is the oldest person to come to the throne. He's been around for a very long time. And I think he'll try, and I mean, to be fair, he'll play that to his advantage. He'll turn around and say, well, the Queen, you know, met US presidents. Well, you know what? So did I. I was also alive and by her side when and met these presidents too. But it means that he won't be able to present himself as a fresh face. And that could play against him. And that's why some people say his son, Prince William, who's far more popular than he is, should take over. Because Prince William can present himself as a fresh start for the monarchy.
Is that a possibility that could happen? That King Charles could just pass the crown down to his son?
Yes. I mean, if he really wanted to, he could abdicate and pass the crown to William.
For now, at least, Charles is king. And he's going to have to deal with one of the royal family's biggest challenges, its legacy of empire. This issue has attracted more attention recently. Earlier this year, Kate and William toured the Commonwealth countries of the Caribbean. Critics called the trip tone-deaf, and some said it had colonial undertones. Kate and William were also met with demonstrators in Belize and Jamaica. These protesters said they wanted their countries to reject the monarchy as the de facto head of state.
Barbados recently got rid of the Queen, and we've seen a movement towards people shifting away from having her as head of state. However, those countries have remained part of the Commonwealth. They haven't left the Commonwealth. And that's something that the palace is very keen to stress. So that's how they're framing it. But yes, look, there is no doubt that the influence and the stardust associated with monarchy around the globe is definitely fading. And that is something that the next king will have to live with.
How do you think King Charles will handle this? How do you think it will affect him?
He will, and it is the difficult task of effectively trying to explain that oppression. And it's a real minefield for the British monarchy because they are the heads of the Commonwealth. So they are expected to go and visit these countries, which they used to rule over. And some people in those countries will see them arriving as evidence of a past imperial power trying to continue to oppress them. And it's a very difficult thing for them to navigate. And I think Charles will face a big challenge in that.
Even within the UK, do you think that the Queen's passing will have a long-term impact on the institution of the monarchy? Like, will it be able to weather this, or will it sort of lose some of its relevance?
I think it'll weather it for the medium term. And I think there's a lot of love for the monarchy in this country. And there's a lot of love for this institution that's been here just a very long time. 1,000 years is a long time. But will we see a change in it? Will it become a more European-style monarchy with a more low-key setup, with a monarch who is sort of doesn't play such a big part in day-to-day life or in constitutional life, and is cheaper to run, a smaller, cheaper monarchy done in a European style? Maybe that will happen one day. But right now, I think the attachment to monarchy and to the legacy of Queen Elizabeth means that does not look likely.
That's all for today, Friday, September 9th. Additional audio in this episode from the AP Archive, Reuters, and from our WSJ colleagues Jennifer Ang and Rami Abu-Kalam. The Journal is a co-production of Gimlet and the Wall Street Journal. Your hosts are Kate Linebaugh and me, Ryan Knudsen. The show's produced by Melvis Acosta-Crisostomo, Annie Baxter, Catherine Brewer, Pia Gadkari, Rachel Humphreys, Matt Kwong, Annie Minoff, Laura Morris, Afif Nasuli, Enrique Perez de la Rosa, Sarah Platt, Aaron Randall, Alan Rodriguez Espinosa, Vladislav Sadiq, Pierce Singhi, Catherine Whalen, and Victoria Whitley Berry, with help from Jonathan Sanders. Our engineers are Griffin Tanner and Nathan Singapak, with help this week from Peter Leonard. Our theme music is by So Wiley. Additional music this week from Katherine Anderson, Peter Leonard, Bobby Lord, Emma Munger, and Blue Dot Sessions. Fact-checking by Nicole Pasolka. Thanks for listening. See you Monday.